Okay, bottlenecking is an interesting thing. Two things before we move off this. The one is, when you're hiring staff, a really good thing to do is to say to them, which one of these quadrants do you love playing in? Draw this on your whiteboard. First thing you want to do if you're running a business, buy a whiteboard, a big one, and stick it on your wall and think on it, because it'll help you. Pictures will often unlock things. So you draw something like this and say, where would you like to get up in the morning and go to work at? Financial, marketing, operations, or personnel? And this is blank because it'll probably be not a real option. Am I not pushed some button? Mute is on. Now mute is off. There we go. So which one of these three would you like to be in? And you've got to get the right people in the right fit. Very important. You can have the right people, but if they're not in the right place, they're not me. So I've often helped guys move people from, they thought they were marketing guys, they were actually great operation guys and vice versa. Some guys think they're great salesmen, but they've come out of a repeat order or a order book environment. So I knew a guy who was selling power tools to the Marka stores. And all he did is he drove, left Durban, he went right around Northern KZN and came back to Durban in about 3 or 4 days. And then the next week he did that in the South Coast. Now that's not sales, it's order taking. You're going into a market, you're going, how many drills went? 3. Okay, I've got two in my boot. I'll ship you the other one. Thanks so much. Everything else fine? Yeah, and off you go. It's like an internal sales position. To go from that to being self-employed and marketing your own business and charging 200 Rand for that cake that cost you 50 Rand in ingredients, but 150 Rand you need to make for your business to be viable, and boldly say, I'm charging you 200 Rand for this cake, and knowing, someone said this recently, I need to be able to charge the right price without blushing. So you charge 150 Rand, the cost was 50, in fact, half the ingredients you got left over from a previous cake probably cost you nothing in ingredients. But when you need to make 2,000 Rand a day, you've got to sell 10 cakes. So forget about the 50 Rand ingredients, 150 Rand markup. Am I ripping them off? Am I not? You've got to get over that. When you're order taking and selling someone else's drill for someone else's predetermined price, because you're an employee, it's easy. When you determine the price and they reject you, when they don't like your price, and you can't put petrol in your car to get back to Durban because you drove to Maritzburg to do the quote, it's another ball game. Totally another ball game. But when it's a company credit card, you fill up the tank, do you want 3? No, only want 2. Okay, that's fine, 2. You got the next guy, you try and push an extra 1 to make up the 1. If he doesn't take it, it doesn't really matter. You got next week. It's easy. So guys think, oh, I'm in marketing. I love that. Actually, when he's trying to sell something, he might not be too good at marketing. He might actually be better operational, where he's dealing with staff and he's overseeing an installation or a painting job or whatever it might be. You might move these guys around. They might think they fit somewhere and they don't actually. If you are there, this baby is yours until you grow. You're the owner. You better get a grip on this before you go, and that, but definitely this. You might be able to piggyback off somebody. Elna's got someone else doing the weddings. They really are doing your marketing for you in a sense, because you're just getting the order. So she's already outsourced her marketing department. You didn't know that, but you outsourced your marketing. So she's got a marketing department. But she hasn't got a finance department. So I hope he's doing the finances. Who does the money side of things? You do. So that's yours. And if you don't get that right, you'll end up gravitating towards shotgun living. Or you'll gravitate towards your greatest passion, which makes you feel good, which isn't necessarily the best money. So your photography, what's your passion? Portrait, lifestyle, studio, outside, what? Outside. So you love being outside, but there might be a need right here for portrait photography. There might not be a newborn photographer in Maritzburg who's really cleaning it up, doing all the stuff my wife does with bowls and babies sleeping and all of those Ann Geddes things. You might need to go just outside of your passion to grow your business. And when your business is big enough, you do all the outside stuff. You hire someone else to do the studio work. That's doing what most people don't want to do for a short time. They can do what you want to do for the rest of your life. Principle. You might have to suck it up and do it short term. This is one of those issues on the financial module, which we're about to look at. So get the right people in the right place is my point. Yeah. Go get a job. Face the reality. Ask your wife. Shouldn't be in business. This is a... Say again? Or delegate all your weaknesses to your weakness. Meaning? He hasn't got the capacity. You know, yeah, we had in our manual, I've given away all of them. Exactly. Why? Is it easier to work at the post office? So, I've given away all the manuals from when I lectured years ago, but in the first page, it had a whole lot of questions of, are you cut out? I'm sure the internet's got thousands of them. Are you cut out to be an entrepreneur? Very good question. Are you cut out for this thing? Is your wife ready for this? Are you ready for this price? The late nights, the invoicing at midnight, and then going to chase the checks on a Friday afternoon. Are you ready for that? Yeah. It's not a strength of yours yet until you can do it yourself. Okay, one thing I want to drill into now as we go in the financial model, you cannot delegate your finances to a report coming back to you once a month or once a year. You've got to get a grip to that thing. You've got to get literate in the financial space, and that's one of the downfalls of the national party education system of the pre-94 structure. Is entrepreneurial skills were never taught at school. And fortunately, the ANC government has seen that and heard that. Let me tell you, Trevor Manuel rescued us from the 2007-2008 crash. If he was not around and did not put FICA, and how we hate FICA, bring your proof of residence and your ID book when you do anything, anywhere. If that had not been put in place, we would have got smashed as an economy. But we got a conservative banking system which helped us ride that storm. Coupled with that is this whole thing of entrepreneurial and understanding the need for entrepreneurial funding and getting entrepreneurial things going. So we have got a pre-94 illiterate generation. And I'm not too sure we've seen the fruit yet of what they're trying to do in mainline education, but at least it's become spoken about and people are understanding it. That what is an income statement? What is a balance sheet? What is a cash flow? How does it work? My kids understand that now, and they're 15, 16, 17 years old. They need to understand those issues if they're going to go into any form of business or any form of getting into somewhere of being an investor of some sort. So ignorance at the moment, and the wealthy guys don't mind you staying ignorant. You know, I chatted to a guy once whose father owned multiple blocks of flats. And I said to him, what should I do? I had some money I was saving. I said, what should I do with some money? I said, I was thinking of putting it into this, that. He said, well, why don't you buy a flat? So I said, oh, no, I don't know. I think I'm going to put it into Old Mutual. He said, okay, well, then they'll buy a flat for you. And I said, what do you mean? So he said, well, what are they doing with your money? Liberty Mall. How's that paid? How many of you have got Liberty Life insurance policies? You're paying for Liberty Mall. They're taking your insurance policy, sticking it in there, making a stinking profit on it, and paying you 6%. Build your own mall. I can't build a shopping mall. Exactly. That's why you're going to keep paying Liberty Life. Why can't you build your own shopping mall? Because you never bothered to learn. I'm taking a 25-year-old at the moment through the process of buying a flat in town for 290,000 rand, a flat, in town where he doesn't want to live, but he does want to invest. 3,200 rand income, 800 rand levy, 1,800 rand will be his bond, plus the 800 levy is 2,600. He's got 600 rand cash surplus in the one flat he was looking at. He will become a property owner and start his property portfolio at 25 years old with 40,000 rand. And if he does it right, by the time he's 35, he'll have 10 properties giving him, in today's money, 35,000 rand a month, and he will be doing nothing. He's 25 years old. What did we do when we were 25? Well, I bought my first flat, but what did you do when you were 25? Because we're illiterate. Nikki's grandfather, who went on to own lots of different properties, went to one bank before FICA was around, said, I'd like to buy this property. They said you need a down payment of 10%. He said, I haven't got it. They said, we won't lend it to you. He said, "We won't, then you can't buy the flat. Can I borrow the 10,000 rand? No, you can't. You must bring it to us. He went to the bank next door, borrowed the 10,000 rand, took it to the other bank, and took out a 90,000 rand bond for 100,000 rand purchase, and he had a fully bonded piece of property financed by two different banks. He didn't put down a cent. Got himself going. We're illiterate. We don't think about doing these things. Take a credit card. Draw the money out your credit card, put it down in a flat, buy a flat. Debt! How am I going to do that? Get educated. We're illiterate. We are. We're illiterate. So we're sitting here plodding along with one little property for the rest of our lives, trying to put something into an RA that's going to probably pass 4% return. And we're going to get to 65, we're going to get retrenched, and we are going to watch our money stay like this, inflation go like that, and going, I'm being eaten. I just got eaten. Moving with the kids. True story. It's so quiet in here. Okay, Craig, hang that. One more thing. Bottlenecks. Very quickly. Bottlenecks. Bottlenecks move around your business. They never go away. They just move. Okay? So your bottleneck when you are doing two weddings a week is going to be, I've only got one oven. You're going to get two ovens, and then your bottleneck's not ovens, it's staff. Now you've got to get another baker. Now you've got two ovens and two staff. Now you're producing 20 cakes a week, and now your problem isn't that, it's transport. Then you get the transport right. Then your orders increase. Now you're going to buy another oven, and you just keep moving the bottlenecks, keep moving around. So when you do this, you identify and go, we've got a bottleneck. What is it? What is it caused by? How can we fix it? Okay. It does just move around. And if you can scope, lovely word, look down the road, and say, what is the next bottleneck going to be? And how are we going to overcome it? You want to do that. So scope for your bottlenecks. Thanks, Craigie. Okay, any questions from T? T is normally a good place where questions get raised. Any questions from T? None. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Rightly. Yeah. Absolutely not, man. Oh, absolutely. And if you're not prepared to, if you're not prepared to handle all those hassles, don't go there. Are you going to do property right? Our first flat that we bought, I was 25. Bought my first flat for 110,000 rand, sold it for 90, went negative 20, after having pumped in about 40,000 rand, 1,000 rand a month on a salary of $9,000. We got stung bad. Flogged it. Just couldn't cope any longer. Couldn't cope. Gave it away for the bond. $90,000. Gave it to a friend of mine. Take my bond over. He took my bond over. 6 months later, he sold it for $160,000. I missed the market by 6 months. It turned. Next property we bought for R299,000 and sold it for $1.2 million. Hit the market the right way around. But we got stung. Pay your school fees. Pay your school fees. Learn the lessons. You want to be in there, done that. You want to have positive cash flow. So my mate is buying that little flat in town where the tenants are, if one goes out, the next guy moves in the next day. They don't wait for month end. They are so desperate. The lists are so long. He's got a positive cash flow of about R400. He's got enough savings. If that stays vacant for 3 or 4 months, he can look after it. And it's in the right place where he's buying it. So you got to do your research. But anyway, let's not go there. Let's talk about the financial module. All right. Yeah, we've covered all of that. Okay, we're going to look at, let's just deal first with the income statement. I don't know if this is going to be, what level this is going to be at. I mean, if it's going to be too simple. Craigie? So, how many of you, let's ask this, then I'll know what I'm aiming at. How many of you did accounts up to matric? Counting. Okay, how many of you did accounting up to standard 8? And not matric. In other words, you didn't put your hand up. You did accounting, at least done some accounting, bookkeeping courses, something like that. Okay, there's quite a few of you then will find this interesting. Okay, your income statement is basically income less expenses gives you a profit. But there's a little subset in there. Income less cost of sales gives you a gross profit. Less expenses gives you a net profit. Okay, and I'll explain the difference. I'm going to write it. I'm creating your need for me to say it slowly by giving it to you fast first. Okay, so you've got income less cost of sales. That then will equal your gross profit. Now, the cake lady's husband, whose name is Raymond. I'm still going to phone you about your company, Raymond. Less expenses. Raymond said that Elna is controlling her stock. Did you remember that statement? Did that mean anything to anybody? Obviously not. Right. So let's I'm just gonna stick some numbers in here so we've got something tangible. Let's say your income is R20,000. Your cost of sales is, what should we say here? Let's say it is R15,000, giving you R5,000 there, and then all your expenses can be R3,000, and that's giving you R2,000 there. Right? Minus that. Okay. So what you got is you got income, R20,000. Less costs of sales, which is 15, I'm going to explain to you what that means, gives you a gross profit of 5, less your expenses of 3, gives you a net profit of 2. Right. The definition of an expense is very important. An expense is something that goes down the drain. You can't see it afterwards, it's gone. It is electricity, water, petrol. It has disappeared. You can't show me your electricity after you've used it. You can't show me your petrol after you've burnt it. You can't show me your gas after you've cooked with it. It's gone. Expenses. You can't show me your labor after it's been expended. Okay? It's gone. Your salaries, it's gone. Your cost of sales is the cost of making the thing or buying the thing that your customer walks away with. It's a thing. Cost of sales. It is the butter, the flour going into the cake. But your electricity bill that runs your goodie, your oven, is an expense. Okay? So cost of sales, buying a vehicle at a price. He bought a vehicle for 15,000 and he sold it for 20, his gross profit would be 5. Even though a panel beater may have spent 2 days panel beating it, the cost of that sale was the vehicle that came in plus paint and whatever else the panel beater stuck on the car when it disappeared. But the labor is done here. Okay? So, you want to make sure of what this figure is. If you don't know what this figure is, you're gone. And if you don't know what you want that figure to be, you're gone. Because without doing that all the way back up again, you don't know what your price is. My father worked for Coronation Brick and Tile for many years. He was an engineer. And he oversaw KZN and the Eastern Cape. And Corobrick at the time had a bottom-up costing principle, which meant what's our expenses, add them up, and then put the price on top. I don't know if you saw the interview on CNN of AngloVol's chairman this last week, and you may have seen it. He said this very interesting thing. They said, so your results are out. I think it was AngloVol, maybe one of the other ones. Your results are out, and we are seeing a net profit of this. Yep. How did you do that when your actual sales were pretty flat? We controlled our costs. So what would you say is the key thing you did in this last financial year? We controlled our costs. What has been the trigger? You're going counter-cyclical to all the other blah, blah. We controlled our costs. He must have said it 7 times in one interview. And I thought, he's not a stupid man. He is sending a message to the world. Labor salaries are going to get capped. We're controlling our costs. He's getting ready for war with his staff and his suppliers. They want to control their costs because gold's gone from $1,800 an ounce down to $1,300 odd. They are working on $1,000 an ounce. Less than that, I don't know if I'm losing you these numbers, but they are budgeting to make it profitable on $1,000 an ounce. It's now at $1,300. When it jumps up to there, they're going to get so much more profit because they're controlling their costs. They're running their business at a low price. But let me not go any more down there. Bottom-up costing says, that's our expense. There's nothing we can do about it. That's our cost of sales. There's nothing we can do about it. We're going to have to sell these cakes for 20,000 rand and say you've got a big wedding. Our expenses are this. Our cost of that, we're going to have to sell them for 20,000 rand. No. They didn't do that. He just said they are controlling their stock and getting better. What did you say from your suppliers? Prices from their suppliers. Do you know what they've just done? Number one, they've buffed up their price a little bit. Number two, they've brought down their cost of sales. The best thing you can do in a business. Are you there? Increase your price or your total income, okay, because your income is from your price, and decrease there and decrease there. Ruthlessly. And what will happen? This book here is just going to go up. This guy... Someone said it last week, last time we were here, something about, it was one of these little, you know, like driving is for show and putting's for the dough. Something about turnover is for vanity and net profit is for sanity. Is that it? Yeah? So this figure isn't the issue. That figure can be 20,000. If that figure is 19,000, you're bankrupt. Long term. You're certainly unprofitable and you'll end up being bankrupt. Bankrupt? French word, I think it's French, could be German. French word of breaking the bench. They used to trade Jesus' time. They used to have a bench out there, trade money. They had a bank. The bank was actually the bunk, the bench. And they'd exchange money. And when that guy wasn't able to run his money change properly, they'd come and break his bench. They'd rupture his bank. He was not allowed to trade anymore. You are bankrupt when you are unprofitable for long, 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 long time, and your balance sheet is in a mess, and they shut down your business. You're bankrupt. They break your bench. This can be as high as you want. If that is also high, you'll end up making no profit. You'll end up being bankrupt at the end of the process. Statistically, in 1995, the average millionaire in America had been insolvent, sequestrated, lost houses, cars, business, gone 2.7 times. Nearly three times they had been through the whole process of being sequestrated. That's the price of being an entrepreneur. Big, big gambling stakes, obviously, these guys. They would now be the billionaires in today's money. 2.7 times. They've gone for a massive deal. It hasn't turned out. They've lost everything. Out your house, go move in with granny and grandpa, start again. Phenomenal stats. Phenomenal stats. Because they bounce back. Yep. Brilliant question. Brilliant question. And when you are answering those questions correctly, you'll have a flying business. That's why I asked the question. What's your bank balance now? What's the cash going out your business? Now that cash can be, bear in mind, this is your income statement. Your cash flow has got to do with cash flowing. Okay? It's totally different to this. Your cash flow is cash flow, which means when you buy a tub of margarine to bake with, your cash is flowing out, but it's actually a cost of sales issue. When you pay your electricity bill, your cash is flowing out, but it's actually an expense. Okay? So your cash flowing out and your cash flowing in, it can be flowing out in either of these two places, but it's only flowing in through that. Or through money being lent to you, which is different to this. But if you're selling, it's coming in through there and it's going out through here. Okay? So my question, why I used to ask business people, what's your cash flow look like over the next 7 to 14 days, is I want to know, did they think when they bought extra cake flour, and the guy said, pay me next week. Did they properly think, I'm going to have to pay this next week? Or did they just go, woohoo, 20's come in, 15, or then 10 goes out because he said you can pay the other 5 next week. And they think they've made 10 grand, they haven't. Next week they get caught with double payment on their flour and they're gone. So that's exactly your question. You keep track of what's coming in and what's going out. Your electricity goes up once a year in price of your electricity. Goes up, the rands per kilowatt, I'm in that game, goes up once a year. You control if you leave the lights on or that oven runs unattended to. So now we're back into operations. Who is making sure the oven gets turned off so you don't get surprised with an electricity bill? So now you've got control. The good old, where can we put it? Somewhere over here. I'm not allowed to write on there. The good old, I'll fold this over and I'll fold it back. Plock. I hated it at varsity. Who remembers what plock is? No one. Maybe they don't teach it anymore. Planning, leading, organizing, and controlling. The wham. Okay? What, how, okay? I quite like this because there's ownership. So you as the business owner are going to plan, you're going to lead, you're going to organize, and you're going to control. But other people can do it. Yeah? The practicalities of it. So when are we going to cook? Who's going to be accountable for it? What are the parameters of what's going to happen? And then we're going to check the electricity bill at the end of the month and find out, did you switch the oven off on time or didn't you? That's your control factor. Why has our electricity gone up or not gone up? Or why has it come down? If it can come down 1 month, can we keep it down there? Was it down because we only cooked half the amount of cakes we should have? Therefore, it's out of kilter. Yeah, outsource. Someone asked the question. As you grow, outsource your back office until the very, very last minute, and then you have to employ that person full time. So you outsource it. A good bookkeeper should be giving you what is called your management accounts within 7 days. I've always done it, even in the church. I had management accounts by the 7th of the month. So management accounts by the 7th of the following month is saying, this is your management account. In fact, I should have brought one and put it up and showed you. This much income came. This was our cost of sales. Here's all our expenses. Petrol, phone, cell phone, blah, 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 all the way down there. That's our bottom line, surplus or deficit. So you then have January, February, March, April, May, June, July. So to answer your question, you're seeing Mark's cell phone was 2,500 Rand in January, but 3,500 Rand in February. Hallmark in. Why is that? I was in Joburg, had to use my GPS, it was data. Oh, okay, that makes sense. 2.5 next month? Yes or no? No, I'm traveling to Cape Town. Okay, we budget 3.5. Simple. When you know the tools. Yeah? So all I do is I sit, management account comes out, I sit with a highlighter. Now I do it online, but I used to in the manual days. Sit with a highlighter, and I'm looking for variances. In fact, if you use Pastel, you can actually program it to kick out the variances. So it's percentage up, percentage down. And I'm just highlighting. Who is the person controlling that cost center? Bring them in here and explain to me why your variance went up or down. People like Sappy can give you the rands per ton that it cost them to make tons in that month. And they'll watch their rands per ton go up and down like this, and they'll drill the engineers, the supervisors, anybody and everybody that can possibly bring their rands per ton costs down. And if the suppliers peak, then they'll factor that in. But if it's operational stuff, they'll control it. Yeah? Yeah. I'm going to come back to that income statement because I want to drill into it a little bit. Okay. Here we have, I haven't seen this graph for years. Let me do it by memory. You have what is called a business life cycle. So if this is naught, you can have a situation where you're running, you've got a startup, and you're running at a startup to a break-even point. And I'll explain to you what break-even means in a minute. Then you get cash positive and you have growth, and then it plateaus, and then businesses have a choice. You can hit a bit, and business owners have a choice. You can hit a gradual decline, which is a common business life cycle curve, or you reinvent yourself and you go again. Okay, with us in our energy business, we are holding on to a product that we are going to launch at that moment. We want to know when we've saturated with our existing product. We've got another two lined up. We'll launch the next one and build off that. And then we'll launch the next one and build off it again. So if I was baking cakes, I'd be going, when have I saturated the cake baking? And what is similar? I can't think of what's similar to cake. Maybe a muffin supplier, wholesaling, whatever. Take cakes to there until that's saturated. We've got it whacked. We've got everything going. We've saturated the cake supply within Maritzburg. But now, because our operations have got so jacked up, it's so slick, we've got 2 or 3 hours surplus every day. So we plateau now. We can't sell anymore. And if we don't, someone else is going to come along and offer it cheaper or something or other, and we just, your staff get tired and everything, you just start waning. What can we do to re-incentivize the staff? Do we do an online cake selling where your cake gets delivered to your premises 48 hours later, so it's not weddings, it's something else, it's shipped around the country or whatever, and you relaunch yourself? That will come. Look at Apple. Apple are scratching at the moment. Apple's figures are a mess. Apple are there. Everyone went, Apple, never! This has been like this for Apple since, what, 98? Look now. Yeah, partly, but Samsung took their legs out from underneath. So even if Jobs hadn't died, Samsung smacked them. Totally. So what did Apple need to do? Because they got stuck in, and then they brought out the mini iPad. They're trying now to the mini iPad was an attempt to do that. And whatever all the other products are that are coming along. I saw a hand go up somewhere. No. Okay, so your question is, how long do you keep funding it for? Well, what is your appetite? Here. rule of thumb, when I was lecturing, I used data at that time. 24 months. Months. Sorry, 6 months. 6 months of your salary, your salary, your car, your overheads, all your costs. 6 months you need to self-fund. 24 months before you take profit out. Not quite to scale. But 24 months before you draw anything surplus out of your business. Now, if we're living out our moon bag, we don't know what we're taking, what aren't we taking, what's up, what we just live. So it comes in and goes out, comes in and goes out. What I recommend people do is they cap their living. They go, use my 30,000 rand a month need to live in Durban. So you're sitting with your 30,000 rand a month fixed. If your business does 1 million rand, you take 30,000 rand out. And you pay yourself a salary. And you discipline yourself. Because what you're doing then is you're controlling your expenses, starting with yourself. So you pay yourself a salary, and this is where your profit share comes in. You take my salary's in here, and I'll take profit as a business owner out there. So this bit here is a fixed salary. For 6 months, you need to have enough working capital. It's the word, the real word for it. Working capital for 6 months. If I don't sell one cake, I don't take one photograph, but I've got 6 months, so six threes or 18, it's 180,000 rand set aside before I go out on my own. If your 30,000 rand is your limit. Now the pressure's off. Now you've got 6 months, you won't shotgun. You're going to hunt with a rifle now, because you've got 6 months of breathing space to go and hunt that right buck that you're going to hit. But if you've got 1 month, you're going to start shotgunning. I need cash. I need to move stock. I'm going to drop the price of those cakes. I'm not going to move them at 20. I'm going to move them at 16. At least I'll make 1 rand. No, you won't. You'll be in -3, -2. But you panic. You try and turn your stock because you need cash, because you need some cash in hand. And eventually, as the hairdresser that we try to help did, she ended up selling the shampoos on her shelf and not replenishing them. End of 6 months, she had no stock left on her shelf. She had lived. Bankrupt. Closed the shop. Walked away. Wouldn't be accountable to us. We actually helped fund the beginning of the startup. Single mom. Ended up tanked. She didn't replenish her stock. So she was ignoring the 15 grand issue. It was 20 minus 3 gives me 17. Live like a king. Go get my food pre-washed and cut at Woolies. No. You go and get the on final sell-by date at Checkers. Woolies comes after month 24. When you can do what people want to do because you've done what they didn't want to do. And bought the soggy lettuce and cut and threw away half of it, but you got it for a fifth of the price because it was on its sell-by date. True story. So, how long do you fund that for? Well, what's your capacity? What's your capacity and what's your business? It depends. A photographer hasn't got, if you bought your gear ages ago, a photographer will be very quick. Your cost of sales is nil in a photography issue unless you're supplying prints. A lot of people don't do that anymore. Or you charge for the prints. So then you'll increase your price here. But if you're a photographer, you charge 20,000 rand for the shoot, your cost of sales is very low. You're paying here, you might be paying your credit card for your lens that you bought or whatever your living expenses were, but it's a service industry. Service industry don't have cost of sales items. It's income less expenses, service industry. But if you're selling product, you have a cost of sales item because there's a thing. Remember, photographer, what do they walk away with that cost you something? You didn't buy the photograph from someone else. Okay, they're walking away with a photograph. It's got nothing attached to it. There can't be a cost of sales in a photography environment. It's a service industry. Doctor, lawyer, no cost of sales items. So when you go on the internet and if you use Excel, you can go to Excel templates and you can say income statement, service industry, income statement, manufacturing. Then this will have a whole lot more detail in. There's all little bits of pieces in manufacturing that they actually do go away with. You outsource. Say again? Yeah, yeah, all those ratios. Yeah, yeah. Look, I mean, we can go ballistic. We could spend 5 days on this page alone. Okay. Any questions on that? I've got a few more thoughts. Totally. Yep. 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 Totally. I'm amazed at watching my mates who get one or two big orders and they enter into a 60-month purchase on a brand new motor vehicle. And I'm going, how do you sleep at night? I mean, I've just been aware of finance. We've had no savings being in the ministry. We just plowed everything back into mission trips and stuff. So we lived on the edge, faith-based. But we're now in a place where we're building a business. I'm driving a 2004 Golf. You know my Golf. I'm driving a 10-year-old Golf. Happily, I watch these guys cruising past me in their Range Rover Evoques, and I'm thinking, I'm going to get to the same destination you're getting, eh, if we both obey the law, and you are spending 12 grand a month to drive that thing. Totally. Totally. We have a huge status problem in South Africa. Mm-hmm. Okay, you own the trucks. Service industry, it's not a cost of sale. You've got a maintenance of your asset. Yes, yes, yes. That's the way you've structured your income statement to look like. Okay. You can do that for an analysis point of view. Technically, it's not right. But because the cost of sale goes with the product. So if you're selling a truck, the cost of sale of the truck would go in here. But your service industry, so your maintenance is going to go under here. Your payment of your terms on the trucks, you said they're paid off now. But your payment would have been in here? Yeah? So, but anyway, carry on with your illustration. Replenish your fleet, yeah? Okay, but there is. So, again, I'm going to try and get you away from that. Don't look there. Okay, it's not a cost of sale. Cost of sale is you're buying a product, and it's the cost that you're paying someone else to add value to that product and then on sell it. Okay? So the cost of sale, you're going to have to acquire the cake mix, mix the cake and then sell it. So when you acquire the cake mix, it's the cost of that cake sale. So if you're in the rubbish removal or furniture. So furniture, you bought an asset, which is your vehicle. You're going to have to maintain that vehicle and pay off that vehicle. That's all expenses. Okay? And then your income is, you might know it costs you 20 rand a kilometer to run that truck, but that's your running cost of the truck. And you're charging your customer 25 rand, and it costs you 20, and you're making 5 rand per kilometer. That's how your mind's working. So you're kind of going gross profit because you're doing 25 rand less 20, giving you 5. Now you run your back office. Okay, that's how you're thinking. You can do it that way. Actually, what you've got is in your expenses, you've got fixed. This is where your accountant should have put it. Fixed and variable. Okay. And your variable will be your rands per kilometer. So if the truck doesn't run, it's nil. And if it does run, it's 100 kilometers. And your fee here would be 25 rand by 100 kilometers. And your variable cost there would be 20 rand by 100 kilometers. Okay? That's how you look at it. So you're asking, and then underneath here, you've got mechanic. Let's call it mechanic costs, okay? Workshop costs. You're saying, this is getting very high, and it's impacting my bottom line. Do I flog the vehicle, then you're going to eliminate this, but then you've got a loan, vehicle loan. True? That is a question you will be an expert at. I would ask you a whole heap of questions, because you would know how long your trucks have lasted for. You'll know, I've got to speak to that man over there who's got a whole mechanical vehicle maintenance and repair, mainly on the body side, I suppose, but engines as well, and go and get expert advice from different people and find out might be worth it putting a reconditioned engine in instead of buying a whole new truck. Now you're doing a comparative study on your asset. What's my return going to be if I make it a 5-ton instead of a 4-ton? That's a very good study to do. And you'll need to sit with someone, Stuart behind you, who's done business analysis and stuff. He'll be able to sit with you and go, this is how you're going to do it. You pay him whatever his monthly fee is. You get an expert to give you an opinion on how to do that ratio analysis. Do I replenish or do I sell? And you use people that can do that as an outsourced service. And no, he's talking about replacing. But they'll be, if they paid off, they'll be fully depreciated. Yeah. Yeah, well, there's two things in depreciation. Okay, so the one is, the main lens that people go through depreciation is your tax. So depreciation in here, depending if it's leased, so you've got, this will be interest on your loan, figure here, okay? Quite technical, and I don't know if we're going to get it through here, but this is interest on your loan, right? And you're actually paying back your loan, but that's on your balance sheet, you're paying your loan down, okay? You then get depreciation on here, which is a tax issue that the government is saying that vehicle is going to be scrappable in 5 years' time or 3 years' time. So we're deeming it to have cost you X amount, allowing you to take 1/3 off or 20% off, whatever the scales are for that piece of equipment. So that's a tax issue that he has. But if his vehicle's 10 years old, he's lost all his depreciation, he's already used it all from the tax point of view, and he's got no interest payments. So the question here is straight mechanic costs versus interest on the payment, and then you take a depreciation into account in that comparative study too. Okay, but it's quite technical, so let's skip it off. The question is, could you replace that vehicle that's going to impact your income? That's what I'd be offering. Yeah, can you get a more efficient diesel engine? Because our expense right now is fuel. So could you switch a petrol for a diesel, and could you switch a 3-ton for a 5-ton, and now you don't have to run two vehicles, you can run one 5-ton. Or you don't do any more 5-tons, now you do a whole lot of 1-ton. So you scrap that vehicle in about $3, because you're actually doing more mini moves than other moves. That is all about this. Those questions, business life cycle questions. So I'm going, where is your business in the life? Are you tapered here? Or are you breaking into a new market? Tapering in a specific aspect. What is this about, guys? Information. How well are you capturing? How many moves are mini? How many moves are medium? How many moves are large? I've got with my partners, there's 6 of us. I'm the only finance guy. The rest are engineers. One guy's a fabrication specialist. The other guy's an IT communications guy. When we start capturing information, these guys are database boffins. When we start capturing information, it's what are we going to want to know in 3 years' time? We're going to want to know the location of the equipment. Is it a fan? Is it a pump? What was the return? What was the uptime? What was it down? We're capturing all the stuff. So we can go and push a button and go, if we put a fan into Becker's doll, what is the probability of us getting this return on it? And our database is going to spit that information out. Now, these guys are highly skilled in that analysis and data cubing and all that kind of stuff. But you need to keep basic records. You want to know, when did that truck leave? When did it arrive? You want to know your hour cost and your kilometer cost. See, now you're starting to be here. Now you're starting to work on your business. How can we, where's our income statement? Yeah. How can we reduce these and increase that? You've got to collect information. You've got to gather it and then interpret it. And you mentioned the ratio analysis. That's exactly what you'll do on these analysis. So the quickest way to do it, if you've got an income statement, is to go, your income's starting to tank. I want to know, give me 36-month view, because I'm looking for a trend. Trends. Not 1 month doesn't give me anything. 1 month's a dot. What's the trend? The tide, not the wave. What's the trend that we're looking for? When did it start to dip? And is it dipping there? Or is it dipping here? What is your perception of a dip? How many kilometers did your trucks do in 2009 versus 2013? Are they doing more or less? Have they got distracted? Have you got a driver who's going and doing private jobs and you can't track him? Is it going to be worth putting a tracker in for 350 Rand to control him? Or just you follow him around and fire him? You're not going to pick that up. You haven't got information. Most people, as their business grows, this gets out of control. It's the boat, the ski boat, the yacht, the sneak through a conference in Spain and go skiing with the family. This thing gets out of control. And this thing will always bite you. You want to get to this and then start diversifying your interests and buying property and being able to cover it and get stable before you start buying toys. He did. He built the house, actually. But he changed his wife, unfortunately. Yeah. Can you hang it? Thanks, bud. Yep. 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 Mm-hmm. There is increasing your income. The only other thing you can do, same as the photography lady, control your expenses. Control your expenses. So, if you've got freedom on how to pay your commission downstream, you say to the guys, I tell you what, I'm going to pay you less commission on your first 100 units or 10 units or whatever it is, but I'll pay you double commission on your next two. Yeah, but you can, through head office or through you. Straight commission. Then anything of these multi-level marketing, you've got to find the right people. Can you do this one too? You've got to find the right people and as quick as you can, grow them. Craigie, there's a life cycle on there too, please. You've got to find the right people and grow them as quick as you can. I've got a friend who's running a multi-level marketing at the moment. He loves it. He says he's taking a guy who's a factory sweeper or a receptionist or something, and he's enabling them to earn an extra 1,500 Rand a month very simply and very easily. And he gets a thrill out of motivating those guys once a week in a workshop scenario to get that little bit extra that their kid can now, instead of going to government school, go to a semi-private school, and he gets kicks out of that. He's a multimillionaire, owns massive properties, business with presences in New York and Sydney, but his passion is to see that guy earn an extra 1,500 Rand a month. So he's finding the right guys, building his structure properly. Let me quickly go to the income. We can see where it goes. Let me just get through my... It's 11:15. We've got a bit of time. Let me just go through some notes I put down here quickly. This, what did we say? Sales is for vanity and net profit is sanity. Your income here, you got a choice. If it's too low, price per unit I'm talking about now. Okay? So income... There's your price. Craig, you got to give me lighter pens. The red one also helps. Okay. The price, the unit price times the number of units. Okay, in this case it was 25 times 100. It could have been 25 packets of biscuits for Levi times 100 people that he sold it to. Your unit price times your number of units will end up giving your final price. I should have made that all add up nicely. It would have been nice. If that was 20 times 100, we would have got our... No, that wouldn't have worked. Times 1,000, that would have worked nicely. But your unit price times the number of units you sell is going to give you your income. Yeah? You happy with that? So you sell 25 units, 1,000 of them, you'll get 25 grand income. You drop it to 20 rand, you're only going to get 20,000 rand income. Happy? So if turnover is for vanity, you go, we're doing a turnover of 20,000 Rand. But your cost of sales is 15, your expenses are 3, you're only making 2. The guy next door could be doing a turnover of 10 grand. His cost of sales could be 5, his expenses 1, and he's making 4 grand profit. That's the issue. So if your price per unit is too low, this figure looked great, but that figure is going to move according to the number of units sold. Right? So if it's you're selling it at 25 Rand times 100, you get your figure. Your cost of sales is also going to be times 100, you're going to get your figure. Let me draw it for you because I'm watching you get lost in the process. If we go 25 Rand, let's do it 1,000 units, okay? 1,000 biscuits. Whatever. 25 times 1,000 units gives you 25,000. Okay? In that illustration, I'm going to do, the colors are going to carry through. If your cost of sales here is 15 Rand, what's the answer? What's our GP? Well, what is our cost of sales? Good. And our GP is 10. And it's made up of what times what? 10 Rand a unit times 1,000 units. We're happy. Make sense? Everyone with us? So what happens if we decide we want to chase turnover? So we drop our selling price to 20 Rand. Our income now is? But our cost of sales stays the same because we weren't clever like Raymond and we didn't negotiate better terms with our suppliers. Remember? This is the cake ingredients. This is buying your product. So that stays where it is. 15. Now what's happened here? What percentage? Half. We have halved our bottom line, people, because we wanted to chase. We thought it'd be easier to sell it. So what happens if we say, no, hang on a minute, but that's not true, Mark. I've dropped my price and I'm going to sell more. Okay, you got more customers. So let's work it out. I haven't done these figures. This is live. So let's do it together. So we're now going to sell 1,200 units, which is a 20% increase in sales. Can you see that? We did 1,000 before, now we're doing 1,200. So what's that come to? 24,000. What's our cost of sales? Hmm? 15 by 1, 2? 18. Exactly. 18,000. What's our GP? 1,200. We're working so much harder. You know what else has happened? Down here, remember that this is your gross profit. And then after that, you've got your expenses. Now we've been cooking away because we wanted to sell those extra 200 cakes or biscuits or whatever we're selling. So we've increased our expenses by, this went up by 20%, 10%. So let's say our expenses were, in our first example, 25, 15, we've got 10 here as gross profit, and let's say our expenses used to be 5. And we had a net profit in the black, we went 25, 15, 10, minus expenses of 5, gave us 5,000 net profit. Are my numbers right? Yeah? When we did the reds, we weren't working any harder. We just dropped the price. So we're also going to have 5 grand expenses, which is giving us 0 profit. But in the blue, we had a temporary 10% increase in our expenses. So our expenses was 5,500 because we used more electricity because we had to do those extra 200. Remember? What's our profit? 500 Rand. Which business would you like to own? Absorb that a little bit. £5 difference, less work, more profit. Hmm? 25, 20, 20. More units gave us only 500 Rand. For 200 more things to sell, whatever they might be. Go back to this principle. Increase the number of customers, increase the frequency, increase the amount per purchase. We did the fatal error here. We were chasing turnover. Look here, 25 versus 24. I can promise you this person, the blue person, would have bragged to all his mates. Working so hard. Sold the extra 20% widgets. Is that it? But the bottom line is, he's lost, what is that? What percentage is 4.5? 90%. Got a 90% decrease in his net profit. He's worked harder. His sales look better. But he's gone from 5,000 rand to 500 rand. Sobering, eh? So if I'm living out my moon bag, I'm not going to notice it. Because I've only got 1,000 rand less coming into my moon bag. Cash in hand. I'm not going to notice it. And this is where you sink your business. You forget, this little chappy has gone up by 3 grand. Only 1,000 rand down, but my expenses have gone up by 3 grand. So when I come to take my family out to dinner or whatever we do to celebrate, because I've had a nice year. It's been a good month. Only a grand off last month. But how did you get there? You dropped your selling price. And you made your staff work harder and you chewed more overheads. So suddenly, this isn't, I'm feeling tight. What's going on? The economy, blah, blah. No. You messed with your pricing. You chased turnover to try and get it back up to what it was, and you've actually got hurt in your bottom line. That's a helpful picture. I must do that again next time. That was just live. Just came out nice. Any thoughts or questions? Research, and more research, Miss Photographer Lady. I have been drilling my wife to do research. And now it's self-confidence because it's a service industry. So when everyone else is charging 2,500 rand for a baby shoot and she's charging 900 rand, she's still going to get comfortable charging 900 rand. Miss Muffin Lady, I knew exactly what you were going through because I've gone through that with my wife. Top photographer doing top products, but it's part-time. It's in a studio at her mom's house. I'm going, no one knows. It's a photograph. One for one. Self-worth. You are going in to somebody's home and getting them to part cash for cosmetic enhancement. It's not an extra room for the baby to sleep in when the baby comes up. It's to make it look pretty. Now you've got emotional cell. And most people pay more for emotional cells than they will for actual stuff they need. How many of us whine about a doctor's bill, 250 rand, but we'll go spend 500 rand on a dinner? The one makes us feel better, the one gets us feeling better. So it's, now you're dealing with psychology. You're dealing with trust. You're dealing with all of that stuff. Og Mandino. Write it down. O-G, M-A, new word, M-A-N, Mandino. M-A-N-D-I-N-O. Wrote a book called The Greatest Salesman in the World. You will love it. It's abstract, but it's brilliant. He's dead now, I think. Very sure he's dead. He went from hand to mouth to being a multi-millionaire salesman, and he wrote this book. It's like a novel about sales. It's brilliant. It's like an older man coaching a younger man, and it's just brilliant. So I've got an audio. You'll find an audio, free download. It's on PDF all over the place. It's out of copyright. But have a listen to that if you need some sales skills. And then there's a bunch. There's another guy, Jay Abrahams. J-A-Y, new word, Abrahams, has also decided to do all his stuff for free. Just said, download, go wild. He's opened up his whole website. He has got tons of stuff. Coaching, he's got a radio broadcast once a week. I think I gave you the illustration here. The person who speaks next loses. Change my world in sales, because I'm involved in closing these contracts. So we'll pitch to the CEO and the engineering team. We'll go away, do our whole proposal, and we'll be coming back to get a signature out of this guy. And you're pitching now and you're going, we're going to charge you 40,000 rand a month and we're going to save you 10 grand a month of your electricity net. And the guy goes, geez, blah, 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 wind, wind, whatever, whatever. And you've got to handle all those objections. And he says, what happens at the end of the term? You've got a 5-year term. What happens at the end of the term? So what? You can decide to renew or you can take our gear away. But after 5 years, you put our gear, your gear in, you've made all your money, and surely you give it to us? No, we don't give it to you. Now the one who speaks next loses. We don't give it to you. You stop. Don't speak. If I speak again, I've lost the deal. If I go, but you know, we can make a plan. I've just lost my nerve and I'm now trying to get the close. Now he's got me over a barrel. Now he's going to negotiate me down under the table. But if I shut up and stare him in the eyes and go, my cake, as you've been doing, my cake, how much did that cake, what is that cake going for, the lady that haggled with you? Muffins. 12 grand a cupcake. And she wanted you to go to? 8.50. And you said, no, it's 12 bucks. And she took it at 12 bucks. And did you do the one who speaks next loser's principle, or had you forgotten about it? But you spoke. If you speak, you will lose. Or you'll make it harder. So you just go, it's 12 grand. 12 grand! That is off the wall, but... Sorry, it's 12 grand. Oh, okay then. Where do I sign? Watch. The one who speaks next loses. Just hold your... Just be silent. Let them square their eyes. That's my price. People want to do business with people who are successful and busy. When we go into companies and we say we are installed in Sappi through to Clover, through to Nampak, through to Polyoke, Eliquid, they don't even start asking us anymore what's our support staff like, what our background is like. They're not even interested in that. They're going, if all these guys are backing you, or someone's done their homework somewhere. Can you give us a reference? Sure. Which one of the engineers or financial directors would you like to speak to? Ah, no, don't worry. Where do we sign? Because you built your credibility, you're confident about your product, and you stand at your price. If you start negotiating on that deal, they're going to negotiate every deal off there. All right. This is a very good picture. Stick to your price, and you're asking about research and the hot sell. You've got to get out there and look at what people are charging. The top video photographer in Durban does one wedding a weekend and charges 55,000 rand. My mate's charging 11. So how do you go from charging 11 to charging 35? Well, he's good. That's my price. Take it or leave it. He can do one wedding for every 3 that my mate's doing. And he'll do a third of the work and make the same profit. That's who he is. People are scrambling. He's booked up 6 months in advance. You can't get him. That's his price. That's what he's comfortable with. That's what he's worth. So you've got to get to that place. So you've got to find out what's the alternative. It used to be someone would come with a overhead projector and put a Smurf thing on the wall and trace the thing out and then paint in all the pretty pictures, and they'll mess your wall up and mess your floor up and be there for 3 days. That's what it used to be like. What did it cost then? Now we've got plotters. We're using plotters. Now we've got plotters. You just plot the thing. Gets cut out in this big, massive, rolly thing you stick on the wall. Question is, do you own the plotter? Do they know you own the plotter? We're talking about the photographer with the rands per hour. You know? If you know, our mutual friend is an optometrist, eye surgeon, some of his gear in his room will take him 20 years to pay back. Massive, complicated. You go and you go, 300 rand for an eye exam, but he's paying, I don't know, 5,000 rand a month paying that thing off over the next 10 years. It's a massive, complicated machine he's got to import from Italy and pay, oh, you're not Italy anymore, but Germany, and pay that thing off. You don't know what's behind. So when you arrive, it's back to the muffin question or the cupcake question. Your ingredients on that cupcake maybe 1 rand. But man, if you are good and your cupcakes taste brilliant and they are on time and they look great, I'd rather pay a premium and make sure they come than fiddle over 4 rand and take a chance. Same lens. They might, but I might just have a few more things to say quickly. So your cost of sales, figure over here, these lead elders, they always want to control. Just joking. So the cost of sales, a question. You spoke about stock. If you've got too much stock, you are going to eat up your cash flow. You're not going to have cash to pay for your expenses. Not in this picture, but the cash going out in your bank. You'll have paid everything to your supplier. You've got this great stock. I can make a million cupcakes. Honey, look how much flour I've got in the cupboard. But you can't pay your wages to your staff or put petrol in your car because all the money's gone to the supplier. The money, the cash, has gone to the supplier. Your cash has gone here to the supplier and you've got stock for the next 2 months. So you can't put money in your petrol tank. So too much stock slows your business down because you haven't got cash for your other stuff. Too little stock prevents you from getting an order now and making it today and having them out tomorrow. So now you turn down the order because you can't produce. So you've got to find that feel for what is your healthy stock holding. And the ratio, guys, some of you have alluded to it, will take your cost of sales, and there's a way to work out what your stock holding is, and work out how many times your stock turns over. Using this figure here. Work out how many times your stock turns over in a year. So if I was going to buy your business, I'd ratio that figure and I'd say, how well is this person managing their stock? It should turn over 12 times, ideally. So you should be using all that up, buying again, using up, buying again. But if you're buying in your business with your vehicles, if you bought and you only turn over your stock once in 4 years, which is probably your picture with your when you're stripping a vehicle down, it's not a good sign for a normal business. But in his case, he's buying all these vehicles and he's slowly stripping them down and selling the parts. So his stock holding's massive for his sales. It makes sense to you. But lots of stock because he's selling little bits of it. Other people have it short and turn it over. A business in trouble, you'll see them now when you go into the shops. Go into a little tea room that's been there for 20 years and see one line of Cokes in the front of the fridge. Or run out of Fanta. Or fridge is empty. What's happened? Their business is tanking. They haven't got money to pay the supplier because they're busy paying their wages and their electricity bill. And they've run out of cash to fund their stock. They're in trouble. They've got 6 months at best and they're gone. If that fridge used to be full and it's not full anymore, it's what my hairdresser lady did. She started using the product and not replenishing it because she needed the cash for fuel and baby's nappies and things. And she didn't buy more stock for the next person that came in. So eventually people came in and said, can I have this color tint? I can't. Can I have this wash? I haven't got shampoo. I'm not coming back to you anymore. Chink, it tanks. So you've got to manage that stock right. Yep. It is a central thing, but it also needs a bit of a preamble and a post-amble. A break-even, wherever this little picture of the cycle is, a break-even cash flow-ish is that point there. Here's your expenses. This is you're running at a loss, running at a loss, running at a loss. At that point, your income minus your cost of sales minus your expenses equals naught. It's your break-even position. Break-even is that process comes to naught, a broken even. And it is where that guy there cuts the line. And they're starting to make profit when it goes green. So, but there's break-even and there's break-even. Because we haven't even looked at the balance sheet today, and I wasn't intending to get there. The balance sheet can be looking different. But break-even generally, money coming in, going out to my cost of sales, that's my suppliers, going out to all my expenses, is leaving me zero at the end of the day. I've taken a salary, but I've got no profit. So I'm just square. You don't want to be there for too long. Lose one customer, you're in trouble. You want to climb out of there as quick as you can. And the growth will be increasing the amount of each purchase, bring more products alongside. So you're sticking the decals up, but maybe you're in touch with somebody who does curtains. And you're going, hey, you know what it really looks like? Curtains I can see are a bit shoddy. What about blinds? We could do pink blinds with our orange decal and it'll look fantastic. And you've got somebody who's going to come in and do the blinds. And they're paying you 10% on each referral. Suddenly now, you've increased your sale. And you start working along those lines. Cross-selling stuff. Fixed costs is this here. Your fixed costs are your dead seats. We try and have nobody in our business that is not essential and is not adding to a future sale or the future growth of the business. So a dead seat is a bookkeeper who isn't adding anything. She's just giving you more information. Okay? It's a dead seat. Outsource it. And when you really are flying and you need help, bring someone in. So I started off doing everything on spreadsheets, invoicing our first customers. On a spreadsheet that I design and I type in everything and make sure all the sums are right. Now I've got a CA underneath me, a bookkeeper underneath her, we're running QuickBooks. We'd like to be running Pastel. There's a reason we went for QuickBooks. And we've got a full-on system running. I have nothing to do with banks anymore. I have nothing to do with accounts anymore. But in the beginning, I ran it all. I negotiated the banks, the suppliers, the terms, the everything. I don't even know what's been bought. I don't even know what our accounts are standing at. We've grown so quickly and we've specialized on putting the right guys in the right places. So you want to look for the right guy in the right place and keep your fixed expenses down. I'm talking buying your cell phone. Cell phone contract. Think about it. There is ridiculous stuff that is being offered now by Cell C and the like. All of those little things add up. Before you know it, you're talking about your expenses. How do you control them? Before you know it, those expenses have added up. Now you've got a base here, not of $3,000, but of $30,000. Plus your cost of sales figure, you suddenly now have to sell 50 because you're really tempted. You know, they put the stick on the back, drive this car for R699 or whatever it is. You went, oh, I can get a new car, R699. Before you know it, with insurance and everything else, it's $2,000. Not $699. Now you're in trouble. Lose that one customer, you're in the bush. You want to control those fixed costs as tight as you can. Craig wants me to end. I'm trying to see what else. Your balance sheet, we've spoken about it. I'm not going to draw it. Your balance sheet has to do with how stable you are and how liquid you are. In other words, how many people owe you money versus how many people you owe money to. It's a photograph. What's right now, if we stop. What's in your bank? Who do you owe? Who owes you? That's a balance sheet. This is a movie. This is over a year or over a month. All the things that happen, we add them all up and we get to this. A balance sheet's a photograph. Actual figures right now. I don't care what it was yesterday, what it's going to be tomorrow, what is it right now? And then you analyze that and you see how healthy the business is. But at your level, you don't even want to worry about that right now. It mainly matters when you want to sell or you want people to lend you money. So if you're going to get loans from banks, and Craig, maybe we can finish off, we've got 15 minutes on the whole raising funds and raising cash. But if you want to raise money for the banks, they're going to want to know what your balance sheet looks like. That starts to factor in there. And let me see if there's anything else really important. A touch, which will be helpful for you because of the time. Let me touch on this quickly on this thing here. This is what it rides on, guys. It rides on sales. It rides on sales and controlling the cost of sales and your expenses. And it's that simple. This year, Liberty Life have this policy. Make 100 phone calls a week. You'll get 20 people say they're interested in an appointment. 10 of them will actually keep to their appointment. And you'll close between 2 and 3 of them. That's Liberty's numbers. So you join Liberty as a life consultant guy. That was their policy anyway, 10 years ago. You join them, they'll say, can you phone 100 strange people a week? Hard graft. Hard graft, phoning 100 strangers. I'd like them to sell you life insurance. No. We keep on going. You're looking for 20. You find the 20, expect half to drop you. But of the 10 that see you, you're going to get a signature out of 2 or 3 of them. What is it? It is what we covered last time, this beautiful thing When you get it right, and I've turned a few businesses around just on this, when you get it right, it is beautiful. And it is called your sales vortex. Stick in those 100 calls here. You are going to get 3 customers coming out the other end in a life insurance context. You might, my mate's got a painting business. If he puts in 100 calls, he will close 50 of them. Is that good? Brilliant. Energy drive, if we put out 100 calls, we're closing 90. But we are very, 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 very specific. If you've got a company running 5 days a week, we know you're going to come. We know exactly what we're looking for. Very, very bullet focused. We fire that gun when we know we've got to kill. We don't fire on a 50-50 chance. We did in the beginning, ran around all over the place. We are now very, 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 very focused in what we're doing. So if we put it in here, it's going to come out there. It's a law. Get your business cards done. Get a little funny stand thing to put them in and stick them everywhere you can think of. Comment on your Facebook page every day or every 2 days. I hate Facebook with a passion, but it works. Mail shot, advertise, stuff in kids' booklets, at school drops, muffins, party things in kids' booklets, pay 200 rand donation to the school, but you put a little fly in every single book that they've got. Get out there, get the 100 people seeing you that you can get the 3. Touch them, find them, touch them, let them know about you. Be the best. Anik, my cousin's name's Anik, the best Anik cream consultant who's the noisiest at every party. They're going to, oh, here comes that Anik saleswoman again. Yeah, I'm afraid so. That is my passion. Just do it. Because if it ain't going in there, it ain't coming out here. And if you are, I cut little pieces of plastic and stick them on people's walls. It's a small little business. You don't really go too well. I'm not coming to you. Yeah, I bake a few. I am a baker. I wanted you to say that with passion, Elmer. What do you do? I am a baker. Passion, head held high. I've got my wife after 2 years to say, I am a portrait photographer. 2 years it took her before she could put her shoulders back and go, I am a photographer. What are you? And you put your head held high and go, I am that. Because when you can, and you're happy with your price, you're going to start touching 100 people a week. And you're going to start getting 3 new customers a week. And if you look after them, they are going to come back. And when they come back, they're going to go, you do such good cupcakes. Can you do, what else have you been asked to do? Curries, no? Cakes, what else have they asked you for? Have they asked you for other stuff? Carrot cakes. What's your special, what did you start off doing? Novelty cakes. And there's cupcakes in that category or separate. So you start off doing novelty cakes. Someone asks you to do cupcakes. See, you just increase the frequency of purchase because the novelty cakes once in a blue moon, a cupcake can be more frequently, and the amount they're going to spend. And then you're going to start expanding your product range without shotgunning. That's the key, to hold an intention. This thing is the sales vortex. It works. Once people start talking about your product, you'll get more calls than you can cope with. But we haven't even started on sales, but there's a whole lot to be done. Craigie, I'm 10 minutes early. Mm-hmm. Honesty, timing. Yep. 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 Yes. 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 Yep. 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 Totally. My next thing that I was going to go on to was going to be time management, which is getting into character issues, of living in the important non-urgent quadrant. Because if you get that right, you'll under-promise and over-deliver every time. And that is a skill which ends up becoming a character trait, that this guy is at peace and he delivers on time and what he says is what you get. So, without a doubt, but I just wanted to pick up on something you said about character versus skill. If the guy's got good character, you need to position him where his skill works. Because he will have a skill. He might be a faithful plotter at one minor thing. He might be, in your instance, a good polisher. And all he ever does is polish and wash cars. But if you can operationally slot him where he's good at, the customer's going to go, he is washing cars for the king. And the other guy, the stripper and assembler or whatever, is doing his right thing. So then it comes to the leadership and handling of your personnel. We had a guy in a mate of mine's business recently who was promised the earth, but was useless in feeding back. Was absolutely useless in feeding back. And the business owner was getting more and more and more frustrated. And he came to me and said, I'm going to bomb this guy. I said, you can't bomb a guy now in November. What's he going to do for Christmas? I said, no, this is a kingdom issue here. You've got to think as a godly man. The guy's unsaved. You've got to think as a godly man, get this out through Christmas, warn him, and bomb him in January, but at least get him through. He's never going to get a job. No one hires at this time of the year. So I said, and besides this, have you actually successfully communicated to him your disappointment? And he said, oh, no, I think I have, but I said, how many times? Five. I said, then you haven't. If you've had five discussions about the same thing, you haven't actually communicated. True. So it was this thing we did last time, expectations minus reality business, which you can get the tape or something. Craig will teach it to you. So we sat with this guy, and I said to him, I used actually something that Peter Howard Brown taught us, where maybe it was Grant Crawford, one of the two of them, it was a Maritzburg pastor. He had a team of guys, and he said, us in the staff meeting, and once I've spoken out and given the guy the task, I crumple up and chuck it in the bin. But there's one guy on my team who never does what I ask him to do. So I crumple and I chuck, and I take his one and I put it back in my folder. He did this three or four meetings, and the guy who walked up to him and said, you crumple up everyone else's and chuck it in the bin, but my one you keep in your folder. What's that about? He says, well, you never ever do what I ask you to do and feed back to me. So I've got to keep it to check up on you. So he said, well, everybody else tells me when they've done what they've done, and it's out of my mind. And in fact, most of them don't even report back to me anymore, because we've got such trust that once I've spoken it out, I know it's going to get done as if I did it myself. So the guy was quite upset, obviously, because he's been observed as being unfaithful and unreliable and all of the rest of it. And about 6 months later, whoever the guy was doing it ended up being able to throw his piece of paper in the bin. So I said to this guy in the meeting, I said, you know, you're about to get bombed. My mate is about to bomb you. I said, you know why? Because when he's giving you the task, he's got to keep your paper. But the other guy, he can chuck his paper away. He went, oh, I don't like that. I want my paper to be chucked away. I said, sure you do. You want to be appreciated and known to be a trustworthy person. So let's give it 6 months and see if he starts chucking your paper away. I phoned him the other day. I said, how many papers he chucked? He said, maybe the next meeting, I'm going to chuck the paper in the bin. So this guy just didn't get that this was a trustworthy issue. And he didn't get that his boss wanted the feedback. So he was doing it but not feeding back, and then he had a check. Now there's sync now. Now he's starting to understand in his operational position, actually it's important to give feedback. In his marketing, he doesn't want the feedback, but operationally this guy wanted it. And so they've successfully communicated. This guy's flying now. He's not going to get bombed in January. They've communicated through that little picture what the need of you is. For your drivers, what is the need of you? Just say that to you right there. Do they know what you need? Or do we just keep going, guys, give me the this. They don't understand why. Why is it important to give me a logbook or give me whatever it is? What is your need? When they understand your need and you successfully communicate that, if they still don't respond, oh, then you've got an unmet expectation and then let's go. But if you can converge that and have your expectations met, they are providing a reality which meets your expectation. You're a successful team. So, and a lot of that is character, but putting them in the right place. This guy particularly thought he was a marketing guy, but he's actually an operations guy. And the more we've taken marketing off his plate, the more operationally focused he's become, productivity's hugely increased. Because he actually was an order taker, I alluded to it in the first session, in the previous business that he was in. And he thought he was a salesman, but he was just an order taker. He was, but he thought he was a round peg. But then we've also got, unfortunately, to be real, don't take people on without a 3-month trial basis first. Clearly write down what you want. Write it down, even if it's your best friend, your sister, or brother. Write down those expectations and use email. Email is a written record. Write it down, have the discussion. Thank you very much. Go and sit straight down at your computer, type it all up. Hi, Johnny. Just to confirm what we discussed, you are going to take out the rubbish 25 times a day and wash the rubbish bin. Boom, 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 boom. If there's anything here you didn't understand or don't agree with, please mail me back because these are my expectations of you. It doesn't matter. You've emailed him. If he doesn't email you back, he's agreed. If it's formal and you're going to go CCMA, get them to sign a contract. But if it's family, because most of the small businesses, someone comes, helps out, whatever, email them. Then sit down, print that off, stick it in a folder. When you sit down and then go, this is what we discussed a month ago. And it's not happening. And I'm not changing, so you got to change. Or go find someone else to work. Got to have those chats if you want to be a business owner. You've got to be able to fire people. Because the longer you don't, the more this is going to happen. You've got to be able to bomb people with dignity. And I'm done. Unless someone's got any more questions.